Hi, this is T. Brooklyn Bellissimo. I was the special effects coordinator on the show Werewolf, and you are listening to the Dead TV podcast. Welcome back to the Dead TV podcast as we finish our coverage of Werewolf the series. I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And this is the final episode of the show. Why did the show get canceled? Dun dun dun.
Question mark.
Ratings? Not necessarily. Expense? Possibly.
Do we have any insider information?
I think in my interview with Eric, aka John J. York, we talk about it a little bit, so you can tune into that. It's a re-edited interview from the YouTube episode that a lot of people have heard, so you can go over there and check it out. I'll pull up any more information I got online to see as much as I could find. There isn't a lot online, that's the thing. Plans to sell the show on DVD was scuttled due to some performance rights issues, unfortunately, many years ago. That's something we've talked about before. There's a big problem with a lot of the old Fox shows. Tracy Ullman show, DVD releases have had some issues as well. But mostly music rights. Back in 2007, there was supposed to be a DVD box set for Shout Factory. And unfortunately, it got scuttled. It was previewed in several ads, which means they had a prototype made. What happened to that prototype is still unknown, and what bonus and features was on that. As far as I know, talking to John, he was not contacted to do any interviews about it. So his first contact for interviews about it was by me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What happened to the show? Network changing, other issues involving just like production stuff. Why don't you go on with the plot synopsis and I'll continue digging stuff up to find about it. Because there isn't much on there, unfortunately. There isn't much. And a lot of stuff I read in groups and things like that isn't always 100% accurate, so.
All right. Last episode, season 1, episode 29, Amazing Grace, originally aired Sunday, May 22nd, 1988. Eric feels responsible for an elderly woman who is committed to a mental institution by her daughter. After she reports to the police, she saw Eric in his werewolf form. He takes a job as a custodian at the institution to look after her and free her.
So, by the way, there's two artists. They couldn't get signed off on the werewolf box set for Shout Factory, and they have remained nameless on who they are. They said Sony would have the ability, with all of their power and money, to just re-edit the episodes with generic music, but they don't feel like there is enough of an audience to do so. And let's face it, there's not. You can be a 300-person group. That doesn't mean 300 people are going to buy the box set. And 300 people buying a box set today in 2024, where physical media is disappearing from stores, is not sales. Target just announced that they are eliminating their physical media next year. So
wow.
Walmart is not far behind, probably, because Walmart's still in there. But I go to Walmart, and there is like a blank shelf where DVDs usually used to be.
That's kind of sad because, you know, any sort of streaming service can pull access at any time.
And they have, and people have been finding out the hard way because they don't read the fine print, and they're getting pissed. And it's like, well, don't rely on the streaming service to always keep it there for you. So up here in Massachusetts, where I live, in New England, there's two states, Maine and New Hampshire, and they have seven locations called Bull Moose. Bull Moose thrives on physical media. Their staff looks like they're walked off of the set of the Man Ray Goth Club here in Cambridge or a Hot Topics from the 90s. So they definitely have the staff that mirrors the clientele. But you want DVDs, Blu-rays, VHS, tapes, cassettes, vinyl records, not just the T-shirts and video games and books and graphic novels, then go to a Bull Moose because they have tons of stuff. And a lot of their locations are near like a Best Buy or a Walmart or a Target as well. So they're a very small, obviously, operation with only seven locations in two states. But still, that's where you'd find physical media. The Elephant box set from France for this TV series is easy to obtain, but you're going to pay almost as much in shipping as you are for the box set itself, which is $56.
Is it all formats for all regions?
It's an all-region Okay. No, it's a region, whatever it is, but your PlayStation 5, it can play anything.
Okay.
So,
right.
It comes with a booklet, I was told, but I think it's in French, and the quality is not any better than the YouTube channel. There's somebody on the YouTube channel selling Blu-rays of like what he considers to be like his equivalent to a superior box set, but he's unfortunately had to been removed, or those posts had to be removed because they can't be promoting piracy on Facebook. Same thing with the Freddy TV show. It's, you know, that's not had a American release. It's had a German release. The score has been released, and there's a book coming out, which is why I mentioned us possibly doing the werewolf book. But we would need a break in our schedules to really start hammering away at that. So
that's true.
Yeah. So, well, let's go on to the episode. That's the ill-fated fate of what you can get from werewolf these days.
Well, in this episode, we see someone that seems to be very familiar to me, actress Billie Byrd, playing our old lady, Grace Sullivan, who is talking to a policeman about aliens, seeing flying saucers and all that. And Billie Byrd has a long career going back to like the days of vaudeville. And I knew her and immediately recognized her from Ernest Saves Christmas. She was the old lady, the person that ends up dating Santa Claus at the very end. Or at least, potentially dating.
That's right. I remember her. Yeah. Okay, I thought she looked familiar. I was like, God, where have I seen this woman before? It was just digging in my brain.
I know. Like, she's also been on Police Academy 4 as Mrs. Feldman.
That's right.
Max Headroom as Florence. She was in Home Alone as like the woman in the airport. I think giving some advice to the mom, I think that scene was. And she was in Dennis the Menace as Edith Butterwell. Long, long career. Let's see. First thing was a short in 1921 as a child.
Wow.
Because she was born in 1908. So,
jeez.
Yeah.
Wow. That's quite the legacy. But, I think the only thing I know her from, besides the Police Academy, but I don't remember her from that because I don't have the memory of Police Academy for my head as much as I do Ernest. Which is the same time as the show, by the way.
I know. I actually watch Ernest Saves Christmas every year.
Oh, my God.
Some part of the Christmas season, I watch Ernest Saves Christmas. And some part of the Halloween season, I watch Ernest Scared Stupid. It's just a thing that I do.
How naked do you think John really was in the scene in the alley?
I mean, he was definitely showing side cheeks. So, I mean, he must have had like a cock sock on or something.
A cock sock.
Yes, a cock sock. But he wasn't wearing briefs. So, like, you could see the side of his cheek. And, like, he was pretty naked.
This restaurant they're in, by the way, that the our Ernest actress works in, reminds mm-hmm. me of something out of, I don't know why, and I know there's probably a lot of restaurants like this in the 80s, but it just reminds me out of something today you'd see on Kitchen Nightmares, that they still have this look to them, and Gordon Ramsay has to turn the restaurant around.
Oh, the restaurant nightmares type of thing?
Yeah, where he has to, like, rebuild the restaurant. Like, his whole purpose of the show or whatever is, like, basically, like, you won a contest, Gordon's going to come to your restaurant, figure out what's wrong with it, and fix it. And, of course, there's, like, there's this, like, videos you can watch of, like, there's 15 or 20 restaurants that failed afterwards. And it's like, that's not Gordon Ramsay's fault. He tried.
Yeah.
You just had to go back to your ways, and guess what? It blew up on you big time.
I've watched some of that show, and definitely it comes down to the willingness of the restaurant to actually make changes and change their attitude and the quality and just how they perceive their food.
I think there's one restaurant that actually took him to court because they claim it completely destroyed their livelihood and stuff like that. I don't know what the results of that is, but I doubt that got hurt. What's funny is you hear everything about Gordon Ramsay or whatever behind the scenes. He's like completely different than the personality he is on the thing. Like, his wife or whatever is always talking about how he's like not that way at all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, don't ever think that he's coming home and like taking it out on us. He is 100% a genuinely good human being.
Yeah.
So it's the bad, it's the ones, it's like the people like Bill Cosby that you have to worry about.
Well, as much as a good person Gordon Ramsay is, Grace's daughter is not. Absolutely the opposite. Grace's daughter is played by Eileen Barnett. And Eileen Barnett was a soap opera star, and it played in Days of Our Lives for 148 episodes from 1978 to 2010 in the role of Stephanie Woodruff, a.k.a. Brooke Hamilton, and Sister Anne. But yeah, she is not a good person because she is the one that commits her mother to the mental institution so that the mental institutions can just keep these rabble-rousers away from their public personas, and, you know, lock them away somewhere and throw away the key type of thing. Very cruel.
It's different episode. I do love how we actually get a good shot of what the werewolf costume looks like after the guy is thrown through the doorway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's an incredible shot, I think.
Yeah,
it's definitely somebody on their hands bent over.
Yeah, it's the elongated arms.
Yeah.
So that the back legs could look as if there's that extra joint with the heel.
Yeah. And then he stands up, and I think I'm watching it right now just to like get like a look to it. And I think it's the best looking the costume is, in my opinion.
It's wonderful. Wonderful looking.
I definitely am trying to screenshot it right now for our Facebook page or whatever, just because it's such a good shot of it. And there are not a lot of good screenshots or anything from this show online, people. the fact that Eric, by the way, uses his real name for mail in this episode is like, no wonder Alamo Joe found you, you idiot. Like,
well,
that was the stupidest thing he could have done. Like, how dumb are you?
I argue it wasn't a stupid thing because, like in our last podcast, I had said like, well, you know, it would be good if he gives evidence to Alamo Joe, you know, and this is exactly what he does. You know, and he wants to know, he wants Alamo Joe to know that this information is from him. You know, so yeah, he puts his name and address on it. Although the address, I think, was the address to the mental institution. So he directed him to that address, but yeah, he used his real name.
Hey, if I send you this photo, can you crop it so it's not so with the timestamps and everything on it?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because I've done this a couple times, and I hate the fact that I'm just not the best editor to crop around it or whatever. But yeah, it's a really good picture of I'm assuming this is one of our guests that've been on the show in the werewolf costume coming at our Ernest actress.
Most likely, yes.
Yeah. So. but I think that's a good one for this episode, too. So.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. All right, I'll send that over to you right now. I don't have any more notes for this episode other than the stupidity of Eric using his real goddamn name in the mailbox. I mean, come on!
Well,
I mean, David Banner would at least come up with something else. David Brewster. David, you can look up online the number of ways that David Bruce Banner changed his name for the Incredible Hulk TV show.
Yeah. Well, Eric's a very honest guy, to a fault, you know? In this episode, you know, this seems like it should have been scheduled and like, rearranged with the last episode. So episode 28 and 29, I think, should have been switched, because this is a standalone plot line about Old Lady Grace, her daughter, and being in the insane asylum, and Eric breaking them out because he feels guilty that it was him that caused all the hullabaloo and makes everyone not think that Grace is a sane person. And it was his fault. So he feels guilty. So this is a standalone episode. And I think if Grey Wolf, because the very end of that episode had Remy kind of pissed off and transforming into a wolf, you know, at least in his face, I think that would have been a good closer. The closer on this one, it's sending the records to Alamo Joe and moving on.
And that's it. The show ends.
Yeah. Yeah. I like this episode because there's a lot of good characters in it. You know, there's a kleptomaniac There is a tuxedoed gentleman that used to run a gambling casino. There's several misfits on the ward that Grace talks with that considers her friends, and they want out as well. So there's a lot of good characters, a lot of good heart here. It's just, it's not, it doesn't feel like a season finale at all. That's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, no, it definitely is not a season finale at all. I mean, at least in Alien Nation, we got kind of a cliffhanger season finale, which continued into the films. So mm-hmm. the films gave us our finale. But yeah, this is, nope, this is left thing. This isn't even like a cliffhanger. This is just a, okay, well, next week they do something else.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there's no mention of Remy in this episode, so it's just a standalone. And I like standalones, but as a season finale, no. That we should have ended with Brian Thompson's, you know, turning around and baring the teeth and starting the transformation and cut. Roll credits.
Definitely, definitely. Well, that's all the notes I have for this episode of Werewolf the Series and our final episode of the Werewolf the Series. Don't forget, you can also listen to our interview with John J. York, which will follow this, and Misha Zeneca wrapping up her coverage of werewolves as well.
Yes. Werewolves and pop culture.
And then we'll be back in a month after this airs, probably sometime in June, for Powerless, which is the DC comic show we've been promising.
Yes. Thank you very much. Good night.
This is Dr. Chris's Radio Horror Program here on WCOW 91.3 FM. One of the first guests, the first actor I ever had on Radio Horror, came on the show, reached out to his manager, and he was quite surprised to anyone who had reached out to him to, that wasn't didn't want to talk about soap operas or General Hospital or anything like that, but a 1980s TV series with John J. York has come back on the show with us, talked a little bit about what he's been up to the last several years, and a little bit more, any factoids about Werewolf we never talked about before. Thank you for coming back on, John.
Appreciate it, Chris. Good to be here with you.
Did you ever have any involvement with that Scream Factory or Shout Factory release that never happened?
No. I just did the show, and we wrapped it up in December of, I believe it was 80, was it 87? Was when we were filming the show? Or did it, it aired in 88. So we finished wrapping it up in 87, and that was the last I heard of it. And we were, in fact, at that time, we wrapped the show December of 87. Everybody in Hollywood kind of shut down for the holiday break. When we came back the new year in 88, the writers went on strike, and that strike lasted for 8 or 10 months. It lasted almost the whole year. It really kind of turned Hollywood upside down. And in the meantime, we were waiting for a pickup for Werewolf, and we didn't get one. So the show wasn't picked up. There was a writer's strike. Life got turned around for a few years. And then, in 1991, fast forward a few years, my wife got pregnant, and I started auditioning for General Hospital and started work on the show in 1991.
There was a, you know, it was years later I found out there was like a comic book too, which was interesting. That has to be probably the only piece of merchandise ever made for the show, which is unfortunate because the werewolf itself lends itself to be like a statue or an action figure, you know?
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. In fact, if you think about it, Werewolf was way ahead of its time. After Werewolf came Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all these other horror type genre television shows, and Werewolf, as great as it was with the effects and with the stories, I mean, Werewolf was basically, was kind of like The Fugitive and The Incredible Hulk, you know, got mixed up together. So, you know, I was given the curse in the original pilot episode, and then spent my time traveling and moving around the country trying to trace the real werewolf, played by Chuck Connors at the time. Never found him, never lifted the curse, found out in the end that he wasn't the end of the werewolf line, you know, so I'm still looking for him. So the short story is I'm still a werewolf, haven't lifted the curse.
You just hide it very well on General Hospital.
Yes, I do. I chain myself to a post here at home.
We don't need to get into the weird and kinky stuff that you and your wife are into. It's okay. We had posted that you were coming on the show again on the there's like a werewolf TV show group, and one person asked how did you guys do the pentagram on the hand trick, because the level of bonus material that will be on this DVD set is probably pretty scarce, and they definitely have not interviewed anybody that worked in special effects.
The pentagram on the hand was one, there was two different ways that I recall. One was a simple just drawing of it, you know, where they would draw it with the makeup on the palm of my hand, and I would turn my hand and reveal the pentagram, which started the metamorphosis of, you know, the change. And then the other one, which was a little bit more elaborate, was a patch that had tubing underneath the patch, and they glued it to the palm of my hand. The wire ran underneath my arm or up my clothing, and there was a special effects makeup guy off camera that, as Eric Cord, felt things were happening, I would turn my hand over, reveal that the pentagram was starting to form, and then they would squeeze the blood through the tubing, and it would, you know, slowly come through the little pinpricks in the pentagram that was glued to my hand.
One of the biggest superpowers of the 80s was probably the amazing hairstyles, and you definitely rocked it out on that TV show.
Yes, I had big hair, and still do, except now my hair is gray. So, actually, my hair's a little bit shorter now. And I did have some big hair back then. Some people on General Hospital still say, you know, John, you've got great hair. So I'm blessed. My dad had great hair, so I think it's the apple hasn't fallen far from the tree.
But werewolves are supposed to have great hair, right? It's not always supposed to be so shaggy and ugly and disgusting.
Exactly, right? I mean, come on, if you're going to be a werewolf, you've got to be styling.
Did they ever tell you, like, how the show was going to end, if they ever got there?
Never did.
They never said anything?
No. Nope. I was an actor with my first big break in Hollywood, working on a series and having a blast, working with David Hemmings and James Garin, Frank Lupo, John Ashley as the producers. Frank was the creator of the show. I rarely, if ever, saw Frank. I'd see John every now and then because he would come onto the set and make sure everything was running smooth. And the directors were fantastic. David Hemmings basically directed almost every other episode. James Garin directed quite a few, more than any other director. But yeah, I just got my scripts, came to the set, lock and loaded, and we did our work, and we worked basically from, I would say, 5 o'clock at night to 5 in the morning or 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning sometimes. With werewolves, most of the shows were done at night, so they were, we required nighttime shooting, so that throws your sleep schedule off quite a bit. But we got through it. We managed, and we had a great crew and a great team. Everybody worked really hard. We did the first two sets of shows. We did the pilot, which was considered three. So I think we did 20 or 21 what would be half hours, and the pilot considered three. So then 18 episodes. I'm sure maybe somebody that's more deep into the show will correct me if I'm wrong. But I think we did, so probably 10, the California area, and then we moved to Salt Lake City and did the last group of shows in Salt Lake City.
Did you ever get to go to the convention circuit with this show in any way? Because I know conventions in the late 80s were very sparse, especially in the horror community. They didn't really blow up in the horror community until the 90s, but...
Right. No, didn't know anything about them. No one ever made contact with me, and that was that,
That's a shame.
I guess, yes. I know that we had some 3D buttons. I still have my hands on one or two of those where, you just shift it slightly and it goes from my face to the werewolf's face, which was kind of cool. I'm trying to think of some other things. Just a couple of posters that I still have up in a room somewhere. But otherwise, yeah, just not a lot of stuff. We just did the show and moved on. Lance Legault was Alamo Joe. He's out there somewhere working. I haven't really stayed in touch with Alamo Joe. Chuck Connors, I think Chuck has passed it since the show was on the air. And there you go. Here we are. Fast forward. How many years now? 87? So that's a lot of years gone by.
Yeah, 87. It's a little over. It's about 33 years since the show started, I guess, since this is the 2020.
Right. Yeah.
Do you ever hit like the does soap operas have conventions? Do they? Because I don't know anything about that world. I've stayed out of it. Let me tell you.
We do. There's a terrific company run by a girl named Linda Rowe, and she grabs handfuls of actors at least from General Hospital, and I know she works with actors from other shows and even other comedians, people like that. And she sets up appearances for us in different cities, wherever they are, Chicago, New York, New Jersey, Atlanta, wherever, whatever city she's got lined up. And we go and we sign autographs and talk to the fans. You know, I got to say, I had a blast on Werewolf. It was a great first big step for me working on a television series. The General Hospital was the biggest blessing of my life. You know, I mean, it was just, it's an incredible job. My daughter, my wife was 7 months pregnant, 8 months pregnant when I started auditioning. And I started the show January 14th, I think, or 13th, and 3 weeks later, my daughter was born. And here we are, 30 years later, still working on the show. It's changed over time in terms of the shooting schedule, how much we shoot, how much time it takes, the size of the crew. But it every time it takes on a different, it morphs into something else, everybody adapts very well. And General Hospital is just, it's the greatest show. It's the greatest show on TV. You've got to be behind the scenes. You've got to see how hard everybody works. And every show does that. You know, I played golf today with some guys, and they work on NCIS, and, you know, they talk about their great crew and their great team. And to have a great show, and NCIS has been on forever, you know, you have to have that for any great show, whether it's Friends or anything. I mean, I go back to the Dick Van Dyke and Andy Griffith show, I'm sure. You have to have a great group of people that love what they're doing, that love coming to work, that all get along. You know, there are no egos, and we get along and we get the job done. And it's a lot of fun.
When you were doing General Hospital and the conventions, was there constantly, like, people like me who were more, you would spot you more from Werewolf than knowing anything about soap operas?
A lot of people did mention Werewolf, you know what I mean? Not that they, I think there may have been one time in my life that I kind of somehow remember that someone knew me from Werewolf, but they didn't even know that I was on General Hospital, you know, and that was just in maybe visiting a town, you know, going to Vegas or going to Chicago, you know, where my family lives, or Wisconsin, Minnesota, I have family there. You go up, you go to the mall, you know, you're going somewhere, going horseback riding, and someone recognizes you. They're like, you're the guy from Werewolf, you know, but I'm on General Hospital for 3 or 4 years, you know, so that may have happened a couple of times. But mostly now, and for the longest time, it's just been from General Hospital. It's funny, there was a girl just the other day. Where was I? Oh, I was going to mail some letters in the post office box, and there was a line out the door, and I was standing there, and I asked somebody a question, and this girl, and I had my mask on, of course, you know, so you could really just see my eyes, and I had a visor on, and she said, you're Max Scorpio, aren't you? I was like, well, yeah. Well, how can you tell? All you can see are my eyeballs. But she was a linguist, and she recognized my voice, and that's the short story of a longer story. But it's interesting. It's interesting, the fans. They're dedicated fans. Great, great people.
You and Bill Bigsby probably walked the most miles in television ever, maybe, because of the amount of times you guys were just, like, walking and walking. Was it the same area, just filmed differently for every episode?
No. We were in a lot of different locations, I will say. I mean, we were out in the Valencia area for something on the track. I mean, I don't even remember the names of some of the episodes, but it was by a train track. You know, I was walking on the train tracks, and that was out in Valencia. We were in Malibu Lake, which is just a small kind of a pond. You know what I mean? You don't think it's some big lake or anything. But we were just on location all over the place. We were on location in Salt Lake City, all over, whether it was industrial-type park, you know, buildings or abandoned buildings, or there was a fair, you know, out in when it was shut down, and of course set people lit it all back up, closed down at 9 or 10 o'clock at night because we were then filming till 6 in the morning. But it's been like an outside shopping type mall area. Where else were we? Oh, we were down in San Pedro for the pilot, you know, working on these old ships that were abandoned. And, I mean, it was really cool. We worked on a lot of cool sets, a lot of cool places. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Sylvester Levy, I believe, wasn't he the music guy? I'm thinking back now during the credits.
I think so.
I agree. In fact, there was one show, what was it? We were out at the Disney Ranch, which is out in, like, Santa Clarita area. We were on location, and it was just like this mystical, it was a mystical show. Anyway, I don't know the name, I'm lost here in memory, but I just remember this one, B.B. Astorwalt, I believe, great New York theater actress, was one of the guest stars, and I believe it was this episode. And at the end of that episode, the music was so phenomenal. I wish I had a recording of that. It was Sylvester Lemmy, but it was very Patrick O'Hearn. You know, it was just really, really cool. Like I said, I think the show is way ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know how it would do today. I guess it really depends on what network it's on, what streaming service it's on. Every time you think that a show is going to do well on one network or streaming service, it gets canceled, and you're like, why did that get canceled? What was the reason or something? But, you know, also they would do The Werewolf probably in CGI, which would be a big disappointment, unless they can make it look amazing. But the practical effects of that show were really great, and CGI was not a word that existed other than unless you were James Cameron, Steven Spielberg, or George Lucas.
Right, exactly. You know, and they did it with the real costume. You know, Greg Cannon was the makeup artist, Rick Baker, Academy Award winning makeup artist, film makeup artist, special effects makeup artist, great guy. He designed the original werewolf costumes and suits, and then I believe handed the day-to-day work over to Greg, and that's how we got it done. You know, and he set up all the different, layers. So, you know, the pentagram was the beginning, the first thing to kind of turn up. Then, depending on how much time we had in shooting the show and what the plan was for each episode, maybe you would see the camera would come up to my face and you would see me shaking, you know, and shivering and starting to change in slow motion with the music and things going on. And then the camera would either pan away, and then when you come back, maybe there was some halt. You know, just a slight change of special effects makeup, patches and different things on my face, maybe add some hair. It would be two or three different levels. I think the farthest level I ever went myself was prosthetics, face prosthetics, you know, some things that they put on my face with the hair, and contacts, different like yellow eyeball that turned my eyes different color. And then then they'd cut back to the victim, and then when they'd cut back to the werewolf, now all of a sudden you would have the stunt guy in the actual werewolf costume coming up from behind a couch or behind a rock or from a tree. And it was all done in slow motion, and it was all with the music, like you say, and the fog and the mist.
At any point, did you feel like they were ripping off The Incredible Hulk a little bit too much? Because, again, you pointed out the werewolf would come up behind the couch, and I always remember, several episodes, Bigsby would get punched, he'd go flying over something, and then Lou Ferrigno would appear.
Right. Now, my only question about the show, I didn't think, you know, who knows, it was what it was. My question is, where did Eric Cord get all his clothes? Because every time I turned into a werewolf, I ripped out all my clothes. So, you know, and then when I turned back into myself, I'm naked. So then I got where's my knapsack? Where's my bag? It was handy all the time. So that was my biggest question watching the show. Wait a minute, where's this guy getting all his clothes from?
Is it like Optimus Prime's trailer in Transformers? He would transform, the trailer would just disappear, like drive away, and you're like, where's the trailer going? Or it's like all of a sudden the trailer just appears.
Right.
And with that, at least you could say, well, he's a robot, it's remote control, so it's in storage. Okay, it's off camera, we don't need to animate it coming out of the tunnel, or whatever,
right.
That's fine.
Right.
But yeah, you're right. That would be like a continuity error today. People would like rip apart on the internet. It's like, are you kidding me? Just like in the next scene, after he's like, he wakes up from being like naked in the woods, he's automatically got a knapsack and clothes. It looks like the same one that he left behind. Did he retrace his steps after grabbing some clothes to find his knapsack?
The question still looms.
Was there anything that you wish you still had today? I heard somebody found the werewolf itself, like the werewolf. There have been pictures posted of the skeleton of the werewolf.
I'll tell you what I might have, because they did a cast of my teeth for the fangs, you know, when
right.
They come up. And I may have those somewhere in a box, in a drawer. Over the years, my lovely wife, we have collected quite a few things. So I wouldn't even know where to start. Wouldn't even know where to start looking for them. But they may be somewhere. I may have the fangs somewhere.
That'd be interesting. You should definitely take a picture of those and post them.
Right.
Or if you ever need, like, a payment on the house, you could definitely be like, all right, these are going for sale.
You know, that's why, two reasons. I mean, I don't even know if my daughter, to be honest with you, who's going to be, she's turning 30 in February, but I don't even know how much of werewolf, well, we really didn't watch when she was, keep growing up, because she was born, and I started General Hospital, and General Hospital has been her whole life. So she may have seen an episode or two, just in passing, but we really never looked at anything. But that's why I want to get my hands on a, you know, copy of the series, if I could, the whole series on the DVD, because I'm sure it'll be in great condition. It'll look fantastic. And I want to hand it down to my grandson. You know, he's 3 years old. Probably going to have to wait until he's maybe 5, 6, or 7 before he can really watch an episode, even though it is dated. But, you know, wouldn't want to scare him. But it'd be pretty awesome for him to see, oh, that's my papa, you know, being a werewolf.
Who were the stunt people that did the werewolf costume? And did you ever want to try it at least once to see if it could fit you, or if you could do it, or was that just not a contract thing they could do?
I don't think it was a contract thing. I just think it was a safety thing, because the werewolf did a lot of stunts. You know, it was jumping around and flying around. I just think they wanted to. It was also very heavy, very bulky, and it would have been, you know, maybe a lot of wear and tear on the actor. Steve Boyum was the stunt coordinator, but I don't believe he ever wore the wolf suit. We had another guy, I forget how many, so long ago, I forget so many names, but there was just a stunt guy, you know, that always wore the wolf costume. So that's it. I don't know why that was chosen to be that way, but that's how it was.
What was the best place that you went to when you were filming? What was one of the best locations that you had?
Wow, that's a good question.
You know, like, what was the food like? What was the people like? Because, you know, when a production company comes to a small town or whatever, you know, they really try to get the locals involved because it helps their economy.
Well, the food that we ate mostly was catered, you know, that was on the set. We'd get to the set in the morning and there'd be breakfast there, you know, out of the catering truck. And the food was fantastic. And when we broke 6 hours later for lunch or dinner, whatever it was, I mean, it was steak and lobster, or, you know, sometimes lobster, some salmon, but there was always meat and fish and chicken and pasta and 3, 4, 5 different types of salads, and so the food was fantastic. The hardest thing for me would have been, and I'm sure my wife as well, was when we went to Salt Lake City, we were in a hotel for, you know, 2.5, 3 months, whatever it was. Just different than being at home. You know, it's just, I never had spent so much time in a hotel before in my life, and I took a, you know, I think I came down with a really bad cold, and of course you're in a small area, and, you know, it's just, I think I worked those whole last episodes sick with a cold. We had a lot, all the locations were fun. Some were bright and shiny and lovely, you know, like the Malibu Lake area, but most of them were dark and dirty. There was an episode called Nightmare at the Brain Hotel. I believe Richard Lynch, if I'm correct, was the actor in that one. He was phenomenal. And I mean, we're just down in a empty abandoned building in downtown LA, you know, and it was kind of scary to be in this area. But we had security, and of course it was the 80s. Times were different then, so it seemed like things were safer. Let's see. Yeah, other than just being in the hotel, which was, you know, not something that I would look forward to. There was an episode, I think it was called Grey Wolf, where we were out in the valley and we worked with a dog. You know, I got to work with kids, I got to work with dogs, I got to work with everybody.
How many episodes of General Hospital do you film in a week before the pandemic happened?
The show has changed greatly over the past, since I've been on it, over 30 years. I will say that we take scenes from anywhere from, it could be 3 to 5 shows out, because they have to be very efficient with time. So if they have scenes with certain actors in, let's say, the police department set, okay, that the PCPD, the Port Charles Police Department set, is up, and they know that it's going to be over 3 episodes, maybe 5 episodes, they will try to have all those scripts written and write those scenes so they can bring the actors in either on 1 day or 2 days in a row to take scenes from 3 or 5 shows. You know what I mean? Then they can take that set down and put up another set and call in the actors to do those scenes. So, you know, back in the day, we were probably shooting, I would say, 5 episodes a week, possibly scenes from 6. But now we're shooting scenes from, gosh, I mean, it could be 6, 7, or 8 shows every week. Maybe not a complete show, but, you know, they put it all together in post, in editing. The production really has to be on their toes to get the show out and to have it look as great as it does. And it's, it's really amazing the hard work that goes into making a show like General Hospital and people, because it's really, they've cut down a lot. Everybody is really safe. You know, they've got great protocols, wearing masks and spacing and, you know, distancing with people. I really feel very comfortable when I go to work.
What, and how does that compare? How did that compare to doing Werewolf, which was a weekly, a weekly show?
People do ask that a lot, or they did ask that. The difference between General Hospital and Werewolf was, I would say, lighting. You know, when you're working on a daytime show, or even let's say a sitcom, a three-camera show, something like that, you're doing it with video mostly. Even if it's film, you're inside, you're on a soundstage, and you've got three cameras, so you can do different shots. You can do a wide shot and a close-up shot and kind of get everything done in one or two takes, and you're moving on to the next scene. In film, like with Werewolf and maybe any other of the nighttime dramas that are our shows, they do what's called a wide shot, a master shot, and that's, you see the world. You see the buildings and the people and the extras and the cars and the lights and the street and everything else. And then they slowly come in, and they move in tighter and tighter and tighter until you see those close-ups that the audience sees on camera. So, you know, it's and then they have to change the lighting. Every time there's a new shot, they're tweaking the lighting, and they're refocusing the camera, and then they have to reload the film in the camera. So the simplest point I could make is, when you're doing General Hospital, it's really at a fast pace. We do the show, you know, it's done very quickly. Doing Werewolf was very tedious, and sometimes I would wait an hour, hour and a half between takes because they had to change the lighting. So you do a, you know, you do the scene, cut. Okay, go take a break, redoing the lighting. Okay, it's 30 minutes. They say we need 30 minutes. By the time it's all said and done, it's been 60 minutes. You know, so you're just standing around waiting, and that's why it takes 12, 13, 14 hours to do the show. And I prefer the speed of daytime. I prefer the technique of filming a daytime show. Werewolf was mostly at night.
Oh, how did that kill your sleep? Did that kill your sleeping schedule?
Yes, it threw my body way off. Luckily, I'm kind of a nap person, so I would, you know, close my eyes on the set or take nice, quick, short power naps, 15, 20 minutes, and get re-energized. But you do what you got to do, you know? I was young and had a lot of energy, and we got through it. It was very exciting. You know, I mean, I was never a big horror film type person, you know, and I just never was. I don't know why. I mean, I grew up, my favorite shows was the Dick Van Dyke Show and the Andy Griffith Show. So there you go. South Side of Chicago is my home.
Hmm. 30 years, or have you worked on anything else, or does working on soap opera not allow you to do that?
No, you're able to do things if you can work it out with the show, depending on scheduling and, you know, different things like that. But yes, I've had some, you know, I've worked on a couple of low-budget films. One aired on, was on the Lifetime Channel, I believe. So, you know, a couple of things here and there. Some films, a couple of guest stars or co-stars on television shows. But, you know, nothing to write home about. You know, I think it was, you know, I'll say it again, I think it was way ahead of its time. So much time has passed to where even if somebody had the idea, I believe Fox, probably 20th Century Fox, owns the rights to the show.
Oh, then that means Disney owns it, because Disney owns all of the media properties of Fox.
Really? Well, you're in the weeds where I don't even know, you know, who owns what, what's going on where, but, you know, let's just say all this time goes by because the show never really, they never, you know, tied a knot and, you know, sent it on its way. The show is still wide open. Eric Cord could still be out there, you know, is now Eric Cord is the head of the Werewolf line, you know, and then some other young kid is doing the things that I did. I mean, you could, you know, literally reopen this can of worms, pick it up from where it left off, but only 30 years later. Could be interesting, but again, it's above my pay grade.
I'm such a collector of scores and soundtracks. That would be something I would definitely pick up, is if they ever release like the score or soundtrack. But what's funny is that music is what's held the show up. For it's what canceled the entire Shout Factory box set back in 2009.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty amazing.
It's unfortunate. Do you keep in contact with anybody, or have you run into people from the show that you work with?
No, I have not. You know, there's one guy. His name was JP. He was the first AD on the show, and then he directed a few shows. We stay in touch every now and then, but you know, that's a birthday call kind of thing. You know, maybe get together. And nobody's gotten together for anything since this COVID thing has started. So, yeah, I'll see JP every now and then. But the only social media thing that I have is a Twitter account, and I think it's at John J. York.
John, thank you so much for coming back on the show to talk a little bit about Werewolf. And again, I will keep in touch, and we'll see about getting you a set.
All right, Chris. Well, so nice talking to you. Stay well, and stay safe. Stay away from the werewolves.
Definitely.